Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we find Moses by a watering well in the land of Midian. So let's turn in our Bibles to Exodus, chapter 2, verse 11, as Pastor Chuck continues to teach on the life of Moses.
Now it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown that he went out to his brethren and he looked at their burdens. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way. And when he saw no one, he killed the Egyptian and buried him in the sand. And when he went out the second day, behold, there were two Hebrew men fighting. And he said to the one who did the wrong, "Why are you striking your companion?" And he said to him, "Who made you a prince and a judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" So Moses feared and said, "Surely this thing is known." Now, Moses at this point was 40 years old. He had been schooled and trained there in the court of Egypt, possibly being groomed for the throne. And yet, Jochebed must have imbued in his heart during that time of early childhood such a spirit of nationalism that when he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew slave, he couldn't stand it. He killed the Egyptian, buried him in the sand. Now, it is interesting. We read here, before he killed the Egyptian, it says that he looked this way and that way, and he didn't see anybody. You know, we often make that same mistake. We look this way and that way, and we don't see anybody, and we figure nobody's watching. I'm surprised he didn't look up. But that's something that we so often forget to do. We think nobody's looking, but we forget that God is watching. All things are open and naked before him with whom we have to do. You don't hide anything from God. And even if a man did not see what he did, God saw what he did. Even though nobody may see what you are doing, God sees what you are doing. Moses, realizing that his action had been observed, realizing that the word would come to Pharaoh surely, that he had murdered an Egyptian, buried him, Moses fled. When Pharaoh heard of this matter, he sought to kill Moses. He was angry with Moses, and so Moses fled from the face of the Pharaoh, and he dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. So he was on the lam. He was running. The Pharaoh was going to kill him in retaliation, and so he fled out into the wilderness area. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters. And they came and drew water, and they filled the troughs to water their father's flock. But the shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them and watered their flock. Now here the girls were out, and they drew the water out of the well, filled the trough for their father's flocks, but these mean boys came up and drove them away and watered their flocks with the water that the girls had drawn. And this evidently was a thing that had been going on for some time. These mean boys were just letting the girls draw the water, then push them away and water their own flocks. And so Moses happened to be there by the well. He saw what was going on. He stood up and helped the girls water their flock. So when they came to their father Reuel, who is also known as Jethro, he said, "How is it that you have come so soon today? How come you're home so early?" And they said, "An Egyptian delivered us from the hand of the shepherds, And he also drew enough water for us, and he watered the flock. So we had help today. There was a man there who helped us. He drove off the mean boys and helped us to water the flock. So he said to his daughters, "Well, where is he? Why did you leave him out there? Call him that he might come and eat bread." Then Moses was content to live with the man, and he gave Zipporah, his daughter, to Moses, and she bore him a son, and he called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have been a stranger in a foreign land." Gershom means a stranger or a sojourner. Now it happened in the process of time that the king of Egypt died. That is the one that wanted to kill Moses. Then the children of Israel groaned because of the bondage. And they cried out, and their cry came up to God because of the bondage. So God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God acknowledged them. Now, when it says that God remembered the covenant that he made with Abraham, it doesn't mean that God forgot it. And when all of this groaning came up, God says, "Oh, yes, right. Forgotten something here, you know." We have a real problem in speaking of God, because all we have is language to do it with. And language is limited to our own experiences. Now, God is infinite. I am finite. But here I am trying to describe what God is doing. The only words that I have to describe what God is doing are the finite words of our own human language. So I have to describe God in the language that I know and understand. But it is limited and does not truly represent God's activities or God's actions, but there aren't words that we would understand to express such things. So God is spoken of as repenting, because it appears that God was going to do one thing and God didn't do it. So you say, well, God changed. He changed his mind. He repented of what he was going to do. He changed from what he was going to do. Here God remembered, like he had forgotten. No, these are the limitations of trying to describe God or to define the action of God with human words. It falls short. But all we have are human words to do it, and so we just have to realize that it doesn't really truly define or describe the actions of God. For we do read that God is not a man that he should change, nor the son of man that he should repent. Hath he not spoken, and shall he not do it? You see, God doesn't change. But when we describe what would appear from our standpoint a change of action, we have to say, well, God repented. No, God all along had intended to do it. So much is made over Moses' intercession at the time of the failure of Israel before the Lord. And so much is made over Moses interceding and saying, "Lord, forgive, and if not, blot, I pray, my name out of your book of remembrances." Glorious intercession of Moses for the people. As God had said, "Stand back, let me wipe them out." And Moses hangs in there, intercedes. Now, who inspired Moses' intercession? It was God. God inspired the intercession of Moses. So you can't say, well, God changed his mind and decided not to wipe them out. And yet, if we look at it from our standpoint, this is what it appears, and so I must describe it with the language that I have. Here he is describing the activity of God with the language, and God remembered them. Well, when we say, well, I finally remembered, it means that I had forgotten for a time. God didn't forget them ever. God heard their groanings. Their cry came up to God because of the bondage. He remembered his covenant with Abraham, and God looked upon the children of Israel, and God acknowledged them. So here they are crying to God in Egypt. And several miles away, out in the wilderness, in the area of Midian, Moses was keeping the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, who was a priest of Midian. And he led the flock back to the back of the desert. And he came to Horeb, or Mount Sinai, which later became known as the Mountain of God, because it was upon this mount that the Lord gave to Moses the Ten Commandments. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of a bush. Now, the angel of the Lord, most times, the reference to the angel of the Lord in the Old Testament is actually a reference to Jesus Christ. He is referred to many times in the Old Testament as the angel of the Lord. He appeared to him in a flame of fire in the midst of the bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Now, many see the bush as a type of Israel. Through the fires of persecution, but never consumed. When you see that all the things that these people have gone through in their history, all of the persecution, all of the attempts to eradicate them, they have been in the fires for years, but never consumed, they remain. Then Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn. There's a flame there, but the bush is not being consumed. So curiosity draws him over to this phenomena. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am. Then he said, do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground. Now, there was always the tradition coming into a place of worship at all to remove your shoes. In the East today, when you go into a person's home, you remove your shoes. When I spoke in Korea, before you come up to speak, you always take your shoes off. You don't wear your shoes up to the pulpit. I guess, you know, you're standing on holy ground or something, but it is a custom in Korea, and so we preached in socks. And it probably traces back to this. Moreover, he said to him, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. Now, when the Sadducees came to Jesus, they did not believe in the resurrection, and they tried to catch Jesus in a trick question. And Jesus responded to them after answering their question. How is it that God said, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob? He is not the God of the dead, but of the living. So here is where God declared that. Jesus is quoting it to the Sadducees. And of course, they quit asking him questions after that because he really stumped them. So the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt. Now, in the Psalms 115 and 135, in both of these psalms, the psalmist speaks of the gods of the heathen, the idols that men had made and were worshiping. These little idols that were carved out of wood or were made from silver or gold with the various shapes, human form, or grotesque type of forms. The idols that were made would have eyes, they would have ears, they would have a nose, they would have a mouth, they would have hands, they would have feet. But the psalmist said of these idols, their gods are of wood, or of silver, or gold. Eyes they have, but they cannot see. Ears they have, but they cannot hear. Feet they have, but they cannot walk. Mouths they have, but they cannot speak. They have noses, but they can't smell. Many people today are worshiping gods that cannot see, that cannot hear, that cannot touch, that cannot feel. Now, every man has a god. You may square off and say, oh no, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. All you are saying is that you do not believe in the God that is revealed in the Bible, but you have your own God. For a man's God is that master passion that governs any man's life, that ideal, that driving force that governs your life. That is your God. You see, God is not a name, and we make a real mistake when we think that God is a name. God is a title. And so they said the gods, plural, of the heathen are many. There are many gods. There is only one true and living God, the eternal Creator. When a person today talks about God, you really don't know what they're talking about many times. The force. The creative force, the energy, an essence, a dynamic. But they're not talking about a personal living God who can see, who can hear, who feels, who can touch, who knows. But they're talking about some abstract kind of a cosmic force in the universe that is sending out emanations that sometimes get as far down as this planet Earth. Every man has a God. Now, as we move on in Exodus here, we find that the Egyptians were polytheistic, and they had many gods that were, most of them, represented by various animals. Crocodiles and birds and so forth were their representations of their gods. But again, gods that can't respond. Now, here the Lord said to Moses, I have seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt. Again, we so oftentimes feel that we're all alone in our suffering. Nobody really sees. Nobody really knows. Nobody really cares. There's one thing about affliction. It does create a very tremendous sense of loneliness. No one can really bear my afflictions. And I feel very alone. But God said, I have seen. I have surely seen the oppression of my people. Not only that, I have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. They were made and forced to serve, as we read, with harshness. The taskmasters with their sticks constantly hitting them, goading them, pushing them on. If they would just fall out of weariness and try and lie for a moment on the ground, there would be the rod across their back, up and going. And they wept, they cried out in pain. And I have surely heard their cry. For I know, God said, their sorrows. So I have seen, I have heard, and I know. A personal God. And that's where God takes it one step further with Moses. For God said, verse 8, so I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians. That's so great. God can always go one step further. He just doesn't see and hear and know, but he has come to deliver. I love that. Because I need more than just your sympathetic understanding many times. I hear you, man. I hear you. Yeah, great. But, you know, what are you going to do? Can't do anything. I need someone to step in and help me. I have come, God said, to deliver.
We'll once again be returning to our study here in the book of Exodus in our next lesson, as we continue to follow Israel's call upon God. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD. And phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse study through the book of Exodus. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
May the Lord be with you now and watch over you this week. May He fill you with His Spirit. May the love of Jesus Christ just abound in all things towards you. And may you be blessed of God as you walk in fellowship with Him. May God, by His Spirit, increase your faith as you study the Word, beginning to experience the fullness of God's power, love, and blessing upon your life as you live in fellowship with Him. In Jesus' name.
As we look back over the roadmap of our lives, we often see the value of troubled times, personal trials, and even the experiences of pain or the death of a loved one. These are the building blocks that establish God's plan for us. It is with great honor that I'm pleased to introduce Pastor Chuck Smith's autobiography entitled A Memoir of Grace. You're invited to pull up a chair and listen as Pastor Chuck shares his personal story of how God's grace prepared him for life's purposes. Perhaps, as you're reading this story, you'll be prompted to evaluate your own past, your present situation, and that which is yet to happen, and realize that it all plays a part in establishing God's plan for you. See God's grace at work in your own life when you order a personal copy of A Memoir of Grace by Pastor Chuck.
God called me into the ministry, and how God has just led us step by step.
For more information on how to order your copy, visit us online at thewordfortoday.org or call toll-free at 1-800-272-WORD.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.